Blog Talk Radio.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man. You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the Matrix shit. Let's go hook him up!
Radio. I am your host, Ed, in San Antonio, and I'm joined by my co-host, Craig, who I'm not the most happiest person with right now, but what's going on, Craig?
Greetings and salutations, and for God's sakes, cheer up.
Well, I should be taking a nap before work, but instead I'm having to do the show because apparently, we'll get to that story. Let me introduce Couture. We'll get his 2 seconds out of the way. Couture, what's going on?
Nothing. Very upset about this Thursday show.
Right? And why are we doing a Thursday show?
I have my weeks meticulously planned out every week, and any change just disrupts the space-time continuum or something.
That's exactly how I feel. I should be taking a nap right now. It's just...
Yeah. Yeah, that'll happen.
I have to have my weeks planned out in advance and everything. That's the magic that is me.
So, Craig, why are we doing a Thursday show?
Well, number one, it just makes more sense.
I'm kidding, by the way. I'm not upset.
I'm not.
But, I've got a commitment tomorrow. And,
what's his name?
I'm busy. What's his name? That's my joke for Brian. Thank you.
Oh, okay.
No, honestly, I have a charity auction to go to tomorrow. So that's why.
Wait, you're not doing one of those charity auctions where they auction out the men and you have to go on a date with some old lady?
No. No, if that was the case, I'd be using my time to tan and get waxed.
Okay, that's uncalled for.
No, I've got a charity auction at my kid's school, and I need to go. So that's why we're doing this today. It's nothing personal, Ed.
Yes, children come first.
Yeah. Well, they should.
They are our future.
I've heard that.
Some of them. Some of them might be our dimensional downfall.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, so here we are.
I'm sure Hitler was a child.
So since Craig threw everything out of whack, we had to come up with something, I guess, off the top of our heads, and Couture came up with something that I guess sounded like a good idea until I realized I was going to have to do work, and was like, I ain't doing no damn work for this show. But, Couture, why don't you introduce the show since it was your idea again?
It's true.
Okay, I thought that we would, being the Survivor Series is next week, so it'd be fun not to really go back and look at everything, because that would take too long, and we've done it probably 500 times on the show over the past few years.
I think it's 500 episodes, the last Survivor Series one.
Yeah. But just go through and list some of our, not so much the greatest matches, but just some of our favorite matches, you know, some that we remember. I thought that would be fun.
Okay, absolutely. I got as far.
I don't have a list. I'm going off of memory, so.
Right.
We were me and Craig were told to find 10. I came up with 3 off the top of my head.
Oh, good.
How many did you come up with, Craig?
I don't know. I'm looking at Wikipedia right now.
Well, I am going to start because there is only one greatest Survivor Series team of all time. And I demand to pick this team. And that is the Survivor Series match that featured the greatest team of all time, the greatest physiques of all time, the coolest looking team of all time, the best fucking hair of all time, and that is the ultimate team of the ultimate warrior, the modern day warrior, Kerry Von Erich, and the Road Warriors, Hawk and Animal. Even though it was actually the Texas Tornado and the Legion of Doom. But
I think you also picked the most dead team of all time.
Oh, dude.
Animal's still alive. I'm sure. You know what? We should actually look through every single team and see if there's a team that everyone's dead. I guarantee you there probably is.
Well, I'm going to be depressed.
Well, you're the one that brought it up. You and your smart comment. But they wrestled. What did they wrestle? They wrestled Mr. Perfect, the Perfect Team of Mr. Perfect, Demolition, and tell me on the last one. I don't remember.
X, Smash, and Crush. It was 3 Demolition.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's when they had the shitty. That's when Demolition got shitty.
That's when they brought the rulers in and killed Demolition.
Good move.
Yeah. But like I say, for as far as looks, there's no team that looks more impressive or cooler in the entire history of Survivor Series than the ultimate Survivor Series tag team. And sadly, most of them are dead. But that's a dream team if you look at the ultimate team, because, I mean, you know, you have the Road Warriors who are like the biggest tag team of the early 80s. You had Kerry Von Erich, who was the biggest babyface of the early 80s. And then you had Warrior, who had his run, who, you know, he was a big deal for a couple of years. So I'll never, ever forget how that team looked. The image of that team will always be in my mind forever.
You remember who won this match?
Yes, the Ultimate Warrior won.
Okay.
No! Wait. Did he? Yeah, because, okay, Perfect beat Kerry, and then Warrior beat Lucky. Yeah, Perfect. That's right.
Yeah, I think Demolition.
I kind of got pissed off after Kerry got eliminated, so, you know.
Warrior pinned Axe to start the match, and then the other two members went to the typical Survivor Series double countout with the Road Warriors to eliminate them. And this actually opened the show. This was the first match on that show. Remember, they were doing they had 5 Survivor Series matches, and they were doing the grand finale match of Survivor with all the winners. And it ended up with Ted DiBiase, Power and Glory, an underrated tag team, in my opinion. The Warlord, and Rick Martel against the Warrior, Hogan, and Tito Santana.
Awesome.
Yeah. Gobbledygooker made his pay-per-view debut on this wrestling program. And did The Undertaker.
Why was this a 3-on-5 match?
They took all the winners from the previous matches, like on the heel side, you know, all of Rick Martel's team survived. So all 4 of those guys went. Ted DiBiase survived. He went to the next one. And the only other baby faces that survived on the baby face side was Hogan and Warrior and Santana. So that's why it's handicapped. You know, it was just one big final match with the baby faces against the heels from the winners and the losers in the previous matches.
Gotcha.
I remember the best spot of the perfect Warriors Survivor Series match was actually when Kerry actually lost, because they were actually having, I guess that was the best part of the match was when Kerry and Perfect were going at it, but then he had eliminated Kerry, and then he was kind of resting against the turnbuckle, and the Warrior just came fucking flying in, and Perfect just got out of the way, and the Warrior just, like, crashed into the turnbuckles, and then he got almost got like a near pin. That was actually probably the best spot of the
match. It's because he took the turnbuckle pad off, that's how he beat Kerry on air. He rammed him into the turnbuckle, exposed, and hit the Perfect click.
And he rammed himself into it.
Okay.
But thoughts on that awesome Team Craig? I haven't heard you say anything complimentary about it yet.
I don't know what to say. I was thinking about what I was going to say. You know, my pick for matches that we loved at Survivor Series. And mine is not the traditional Survivor Series tag team match, but it was Diesel versus Brett from Survivor Series 95.
Yes, that's on my list of that was an awesome match.
The match was tremendous, even though it had Diesel in it. And I think it kind of kicked off the Attitude Era to a certain degree.
Yeah, this was like I think since this was, we had already seen the Macho Man and Ricky Morton table spot, but this was like the very next big table spot I ever saw.
Yeah.
I mean, there was people say the Flair and Funk, you know, pile driver on the table. But really, there was just a Terry Funk pile driving Ric Flair, and he just kind of like rolled him off the table. It's not like this table split in half or anything when they did that. But, I mean, Diesel shot Fred off the apron, and he just, that table just, I mean, it was awesome. Awesome.
And they didn't bother to, you know, clean the table up or anything.
Yeah.
And when Brett went through it, the monitors jumped high in the air and crashed down upon him as he laid in the rubble. It was awesome.
Well, now we know why
they're
using
like the first
table,
big table spot ever in WWE at that point. I think it might have been the first one. First one I ever seen.
The King. Harley Race.
Oh, that's
right.
Yeah.
This was violent.
Although it did end
this
his career.
Trey should be embarrassed that I remembered that before him.
Well, it did end all the way his career, you know. No band around that table snapped and, like, cut into his intestines.
Oh. I know, and that was kind of gross.
That sucks.
I was hoping we'd see some surgery on him like we saw that Superstar Billy Graham surgery, which I watched the other day again, like, for the first time in 20 years.
Why?
Well, I was watching some of the old Superstars episodes, and there was an update segment on Superstar Billy Graham.
I see. That makes more sense.
Yeah. It was disgusting.
That was so gross. They didn't even, like, it was so weird, too, because all of a sudden you're just watching Operation, and you didn't know what the fuck was going on. They didn't say anything
like
what was going on until after they showed it. At first, you're just watching a hip get cut open and put apart, and you're like, what the fuck is this? And then they announced that it was Superstar Billy Graham.
His hip is, like, exposed, and they just take a scalpel and run it down, and it, like, splits like a, I don't know, like you put a corn dog in the microwave for too long. You know?
I just threw up in my mouth. Thank you.
We just throw up in mine.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, this was the night before, you know, the big thing when Shawn Michaels, quote-unquote, collapsed the next night.
Yes.
It's Owen Hart. Which I thought was a pretty cool angle at the time because I thought it was real.
Oh, yeah. And so did my little girl at the time.
Anyway, I guess I'm next. I'll go with the traditional matchup from the first one. The 10 tag team Survivor Series match from the first one.
Bastard, you stole my third one.
Anyway, it was Strike Force of Zinc and Martel, or Tito Santana and Rick Martel, as it was. It was them, the Demolition, the Killer Bees, the Rougeau Brothers, and the Young Stallions, Paul Roma and Jim Powers, against the
greatest
Hart Foundation.
Tag teams of all time.
They were for them to take him, I thought.
Yeah, they didn't like each other, dumbasses. They get the first push of their career and they don't like each other and it fucks everything up.
Oh, well. Then it was Hart Foundation Demolition, the new dream team of Dino Bravo and Greg Valentine. Okay, who else was it? It was the Islanders. The Islanders. And
that's false advertising. They weren't a dream team.
Oh, well. Undertaker's not an Undertaker. And the Bolsheviks, Nikolai Volkov and Boris Zhukov. And Boris Zhukov was the AWA World Tag Team Champion. He just left to go to the WWF and didn't drop the title. So.
That's funny. I think a lot of people did that or did some weird shit with the AWA title when they left. Like Stan Hansen and running his truck
over with his truck.
Yeah.
Throw over the title with his truck, send it back to him.
Yeah, this was my favorite match because it was actually, in my opinion, the best one. I don't know. The other match I'm going to bring up from this card was pretty damn good. But, I mean, this one had some awesome wrestling because there were some awesome wrestlers in the match. I mean, you know, Santana was, this was still when he was still, you know, good. Martel was always good. The Young Stallions were actually like two of the best jobbers, young jobbers at the time. I mean, they were actually, they were decent. The Rajoo brothers, whatever their fucking names are, they were good. The Killer Bees, they were both awesome. And then you have the, you know, one of the best tag teams of all time as far as workers, the you know, the British Bulldogs. And then you got Brett in there, and you got the Islanders. The Islanders were awesome, you know.
Yeah.
They did get a little weak with Volkov. Well, you know, Volkov and Zhukov, you know, they weren't names, but they knew what they were doing. And then Greg was great, and Bravo sucked. It was a great working match, and it was a long match.
It's about 30 minutes.
I think it was 37 minutes, and it was cool because of the fucking upset. Because who would have fucking thought that fucking, you know, Roma and Powers would be survivors? Everyone probably figured they'd be the first team out.
Yeah, they survived, and the Killer Bees. With the mask gimmick at the end, and they beat the Islanders.
The Islanders, man, that team, they weren't together long enough. They were so badass.
And I was so disappointed when Tama, or the Tonga Kid, left. And I think I read in the Observer. And then they put in, remember C.V. Offie?
Wasn't C.V. Offie in it before Tama?
No.
That's how I kind of remember it.
Then they plugged in.
I always thought they were better when they got Tama after Stevie left.
Well, they had a team from time to time, but they weren't any kind of a regular tag team. Just two Polynesians teaming together every once in a while.
That was one of the most underrated tag teams of all time. I mean, Haku was, and this is when Haku was still in super good shape, you know what I mean? He started to get a little bigger once he became, like, mean, you know. But he was so badass. I mean, he was fast, strong, had all, you know, all kinds of different styles. I remember, he wasn't the smartest person because I remember when he body slammed Big John Studd when Andre the Giant was going to have the big body slam match with him on Madison at WrestleMania before, but. Yeah, I mean, they were badass.
That was like a year after when he slammed Big John Studd.
It was before.
No, it was in 1986.
No, it was before.
Match with Andre with...
Why do you argue with Couture?
The match with Andre was the first WrestleMania, and King Tonga wasn't even a company in 1985 at that point. And he came in later in the year, and he body slammed Big John Studd on the episode of Championship Wrestling. In like July of the next year, in 1986, so he could not possibly have done it for the Andre match.
You're making all that up, but anyway, the Killer Bees were also an awesome tag team. Everybody
out there in Radio Land believes me, so that's all I need.
But the Killer Bees had some of the... Wasn't that... The gimmick was so stupid. The Killer Bees. The name is just stupid, and then wearing fucking black and yellow is stupid. But they were fucking
great.
Awesome. Yeah, there's a 2 out of 3 with Demolition that's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
So I guess we're moving on since we got Craig's opinion right there. Okay. My second match is the second greatest match in the history of Survivor Series. And it'll always be the greatest women's Survivor Series match that could ever happen. And that is the theme of the Fabulous Moolah, Rockin' Robin, Velvet McIntyre, and the Jumping Bomb Angels, who were by far the best workers on this whole fucking show, against Sensational Sherry, the Glamour Girls of Layami Tai and Judy Martin, who were a pretty damn good tag team, and Dawn Marie, not the Dawn Marie from Lance Storm fame, but another Dawn Marie, and also
I would think not.
Donna.
How old was she? Been about 5? Are you 10?
Right? Yeah, that would have been kind of weird. And then Donna, I don't know how to say her last name.
Cristinello.
Cristinello, okay. Yeah, they're both of those basically were just two of Moolah's girls that were basically jobber girls, you know. But the Jumping Bomb Angels were fucking unbelievable. It's like no one, you know, I mean, I guess All Japan had been going on a little bit before that, but because I remember the Crush Girls came to WWE, but these girls blew the Crush Girls away as far as, like, just nonstop, dude. I mean, they were fucking awesome. Sherry was, you know, this is basically her peak and when she was actually wrestling. The Glamour Girls, they, like I say, they were, you know, older and bigger, but they were really, really good. Rockin' Robin, who also sang the national anthem or sang something at one of the shows. It was also Jake the Snake's sister.
And Sam Houston's sister, yeah. And she, sang the national anthem.
Yeah. And then later had a short run of the title, but that was like one of the least periods where they really focused on women's wrestling. Velvet McIntyre, who was also like the long-running babyface against Moolah, who apparently was deaf or something, and she was like Kevin Von Erich. She always wrestled barefoot, and she was pretty fine. I like Velvet. Always made me sad when she lost to Moolah. And, you know, of course, Moolah, you know, once again got snubbed from the Wrestling Hall of Fame. It's the biggest travesty in the history of the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame. Sandman and Daz and them all cry about Big Daddy, but goddamn Big Daddy couldn't fucking lick the boots of the Fabulous Moolah.
Who's Big Daddy? he's that bad guy in England that killed that one dude.
That's what I heard.
Yeah, Moolah never killed nobody.
At least Rock and Roll Express got in.
It's true. It's very true.
So what do you think of this match, Craig?
I have no memory of this whatsoever. But I will
you
tell you.
You don't remember the Jumping Bomb Angels?
I remember the Jumping Bomb Angels because when they came into the WWF at the time, they were absolutely amazing. I'd never seen anything like that in my life. Those girls were off the charts good and way ahead of their time. So yeah, I remember the Jumping Bomb Angels.
The only thing close I could see at that time was like, you know, maybe the Bulldogs.
Yeah, yeah, that's
Ricky Steamboat, stuff like that. You know, just the high flying stuff.
Mm-hmm.
This whole match, it looked like I think these two teams got back together and they returned 20 years later to be in the Miss NWO pageant of that first sold-out show.
Seriously?
No, I'm kidding.
Okay, good.
They do look like the roster of women that were in that Miss NWO pageant, if you recall from that sold-out show. They brought all the middle-aged women in. Eric Bischoff kissed all of them.
Uh-huh. Been trying to forget about that whole pay-per-view since the day I saw it. minus the ladder match. But anyway.
Yeah, I remember this was awesome because Jesse Ventura was awesome. He was going crazy because he never seen anything. He put over the Jumping Bomb Man, which was great, and because he'd never seen anything like that. And I love the finish because they drop kicked Jimmy Hart off the apron. Nuke took the greatest backwards bump, like one of the greatest backwards bumps I've ever seen off the apron, where he just cut his legs on the ropes and just fell backwards. It was awesome. You had to see it to appreciate it.
And another thing is, like I said, you know, everyone was surprised that the Young Stallions advancing. You would think that the lone survivors or the main focus of this match would have been Moolah and Sherry, which was the focus of the match, but not the whole thing. But it didn't come down. They were both eliminated before the end. I think Moolah was actually kind of eliminated kind of early, or halfway at least.
Yeah, I remember because the Velvet pinned Sensational Sherry to get her out of there. And Moolah was gone long before that, so. You'd always see some strange pins in these Survivor Series matches. I remember Sensational Sherry, she pinned Rockin' Robin just after a suplex. Your basic suplex. You know, just like a random, everyday move. People get pinned by these Survivor Series matches, so.
Well, when you got to eliminate so many people, you know, some of them are going down. Unfortunately, you get eliminated like that, but this match went like... it went over 20 minutes or around 20 minutes.
Yeah. I think all these matches did. That's what I liked. You got, there was a lot of great wrestling on these early shows with all these elimination matches. So, I actually, real quick, I have an update on the King Tonga, Big John Studd body slam front. So,
okay.
On June the 3rd, 1986, in Poughkeepsie, New York, at the Mid-Hudson Civic Center, John Studd defeated Jim Powers and Rick Hunter in a handicap match, body slam match, 2 minutes and 17 seconds when he pinned Hunter with a power slam. And then King Tonga had challenged him to a body slam match four, and then after the match, King Tonga returned to body slam Big John Studd in 1986, a full year after the match with Andre at the first WrestleMania.
That's another angle.
I win.
That's some other angle.
I win.
That's some
you
other
lose.
Angle. No. That's another
I
angle.
I win.
You don't know. You're making it up.
No, you're making this up so you don't sound stupid.
I'm not
but
making
you do.
It up.
I'm reading it right now. You want me to send it to you?
Dude, there's been like a million angles. It happened way before that.
So they did the angle the year before, and they returned and did the same angle.
No,
this
wasn't an angle. It was just a match, and he just picked them up and body slammed them for no reason.
You bullshit.
I'm not bullshit. Craig, go ahead.
I know what I'm talking about. I win, you lose, accept it. We move on.
Whatever.
Who's next?
Okay, so moving on. 2005 Survivor Series. I've talked about this before. I've marked out about this match so many times. It was Team Raw versus Team SmackDown. On Team SmackDown, you had Batista, Rey Mysterio, JBL, Bobby Lashley, and Randy Orton. And on the other team, Team Raw, Shawn Michaels, Kane, Big Show, Carlito, and Chris Masters. And the first fall was taken by Shawn Michaels on Bobby Lashley. And then from there, Team SmackDown lays waste to all of Team Raw, and only leaving Shawn Michaels. Shawn Michaels, beaten, bloody, comes back and proceeds to put on a clinic. Sweet chin music on Rey Mysterio, on Bradshaw, and then I wouldn't say from out of nowhere, but almost from out of nowhere, Randy Orton hits him with the RKO for the win. Absolutely amazing.
Was this the one where Austin had to leave when his team lost? He was the general manager. I think it was Eric Bischoff's team against Austin's team.
That's a detail I can't remember.
I remember Austin's team lost, and he was no longer the co-GM, so he had to leave. And then he came back 2 weeks later as a sheriff on his ATV. So kind of stupid. But I remember the match. The match was very good.
Yeah, the match was insanely good. It was one of my favorites. I mean, this is one that when it came out on DVD, I had to – I put it on the to-buy list. So it was awesome. You go out of your way and look at that.
That was the that was the Survivor Series. Did Eddie pass away right before or after that? I think it was before.
2005.
Right around there was in November when he died.
Ed, grab the next one. I have to answer the door.
Okay.
Why do I do it? It's Katara's turn.
Oh, it's my turn. As funny as it is, you stole one of my matches. I was going to pick that woman's match for one of my favorite ones.
That's what you get for...
Do what?
I said, that's what you get for picking one of my matches.
Okay, well, I'll pick in 1988, the next 10-team tag team match. From the 1988 Survivor Series, it was Demolition, the Rougeau Brothers, the Bolsheviks, Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard, and the Conquistadors went up against the Powers of Pain, the Rockers, the British Bulldogs, the Heart Foundation, and the Young Dragons. That's a hell of a team right there.
Yeah. It wasn't. I didn't think it was as good as the other one, though. I thought the other one was better overall. But and then the Power of the Pain. I remember they came in with that mega push, and then they realized that they pretty much sucked, and then broke them up and gave Barbarian Antlers and the Warlord like a Phantom of the Opera type mask and a big fucking axe specter. I don't know what the fuck it was, but he had some big fucking metal thing.
This is the one where they turned both Powers of Pain and Demolition in the same match, if you remember.
Fuji
did something with, I guess Demolition wasn't paying attention to him, so when one of Demolition hit the ropes, then Fuji opened the ropes and Smash fell out and got counted out, and they body slammed Fuji on the arena floor, and they went back to the dressing room, and the Powers of Pain fell up. And they ended up winning the match, and they went and became their new manager, so that's how they turned. I thought it was a pretty good turn myself. But
who are the Conquistadors again on this one? Because there's been many.
I want to say it's Jose Luis Rivera and Jose Estrada, I think.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you know, you're probably right, because they were the early ones. But, yeah, it was a good match. I thought the other one was a little better, but, you know, it was awesome any time from Telly or Arn were in there, that's for sure.
And I like they had the, remember they had the situation with the Rougeaus and the Bulldogs? So they got the Rougeaus out, like, in the first 10 of the match, and the Bulldogs had to stay in for, like, the whole 40 minutes. Because that was the Bulldogs last night, and they were afraid they were going to do something. So the Rougeaus got out.
That was after which Bruiser was it? The Mountie.
Jock had done.
He sucker punched Dynamite Kid. Dynamite was fucking with him forever, and then he just decided, fuck it, I've had it, and he sucker punched him. And then there's reports of whether he just sucker punched him or sucker punched him with, like, brass knuckles or something. And shit, because he did sucker punch the living shit out of him.
Yeah, and knocked some of his teeth out.
Yeah.
I remember that story. That was awesome. I don't think he was a little peckerhead. So, I don't care.
I'm back, by the way.
Okay. We were talking about it was the second 10-man tag team match from 1988 with Demolition and the Bolsheviks and Arn and Tully and the Rougeaus and Conquistadors against Powers of Pain, the Rockers, Heart Foundation, the Bulldogs, and the Young Stallions.
The the thing I remember most about this match, Shawn Michaels took the highest backdrop from Akeem that I can ever remember.
Akeem's been in this match.
But not,
you're thinking of WrestleMania 5.
I am
no, the Warlord.
You said
no,
88.
He was on the team of the Warlord. He didn't been the Warlord.
They were on the same team.
Yeah. So.
Did you say 88?
Yes.
88. What am I looking at? Oh, my bad.
You're at the wrong Wikipedia page.
No, no. I'm looking at something completely different. Well, anyway, that was an awesome backdrop that Shawn Michaels took.
Well, he took that backdrop several times, so I can understand getting it mixed up.
Yeah, at some time in that match, there was a large backdrop. I'm sure of it. Anyway, moving right along. Glossing over that as quickly as possible.
It's my turn. It's my turn because it was just Couture's turn.
I'm sorry.
How rude. My next match is one of the greatest matches in the history of Survivor Series, and it features one of my favorite wrestlers of all time, Mankind. And this is when he went on to he had to be in this tournament, and unfortunately they brought in a ringer to face him in the first round, and it was Mankind versus the great Dwayne Gill, and they had this awesome 5-star match. You know, Dwayne Gill put on a wrestling clinic, and one of the greatest matches in the history of Survivor Series.
I love this whole show, this whole tournament, because they did the big swerve at the end with The Rock, but they redid the Montreal, and The Rock became the champion when he was a babyface and became the corporate champion. I love this whole show. It was awesome.
This show makes the writing teams of today just look how incompetent they are, because this show was just so brilliantly booked. You know, everything about the turn, because they were so making Rock the fucking hero up until the end, and you know, they're giving Mankind the easy road, or helping them, you know, in a way, and then that double turn at the end, and this led to Mankind going babyface and having that great run after that, and but this was just so awesome, you know, the way they did it with Bossman and Rock, where basically they were trying to make it look like they were throwing Bossman the thing, but in reality, it turns out, you know, they knew they were throwing it to Rock so he could, you know, yeah.
And this was when Shane McMahon was the ref. This was in 98. Remember Shane McMahon was the referee
98.
At that point? And he had refereed. He's the one that rehired Austin back, and they had the thing with him and Vince. And then he was refereeing Austin's match with Mankind, and then he screwed Steve Austin. So it was a big swerve there, too. And Austin was eliminated.
I got it. Okay.
And then this is the Hardy Boys. This is when they still wrestled with Paisley's in their opening match.
Wow, there's a lot of talent that hasn't gone on to great things. Tiger Ali Singh, Steve Blackman, goodness, X-Pac and Regal.
Well, I blame Steve Blackman on Al Snow. He took his career in the shitter.
The Deadly Game Tournament.
Yeah, because this came about because they had the three-way with Austin and Undertaker and Kane. And the Kane and Undertaker pinned Austin at the same time to win the championship. And so they had another pay-per-view match the next month with Undertaker against Kane for the title, with Austin as the referee. And Austin, he stunned both guys and knocked them out and didn't declare a winner. And then McMahon fired him, and that's when he made Vince pee himself on TV when he put the gun to his head.
Right.
And Shane McMahon rehired. I never understood why you're going to do this big swerve to screw a guy and you fire him, but then you have your son hire him back as a big swerve, and then you screw him again, but he's still hired back. I don't understand stuff. I never understood stuff like that. It's silly.
Okay. 2002, Survivor Series, the very first ever Elimination Chamber match.
And yeah, this is
featured. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying it's a good match. Go ahead. Tell us who's in it.
Yeah, we had Shawn Michaels, and he defeated Triple H, Rob Van Dam, Booker T, Kane, and Chris Jericho. And something new, something innovative. Rob Van Dam tried to kill Triple H at some point in this match.
I don't think he tried. I think he just hooked up.
The problem is, I just actually heard Jericho was on a... oh, man, who was he on with? Anyway, on his podcast, he was complaining about the cell. Oh, he was on with Dolph Ziggler.
Oh, okay.
It was Jericho. Dolph was on with the team doctor, or the WWE doctor. Like, apparently, Dolph traveled with WWE doc, and also with Justin Roberts, and at some point throughout his career, also Broski. Zack Ryder, thank you. Anyway, he was complaining about the cell because it's the
biggest quote unquote gimmick match that hurts the worst. He said there's no give to the steel, even the chains are tight and they hurt. There's no room to get on top of the cell and actually stand up to do a move. He said if they would have given him two extra feet, he would have been able to probably hit that move no problem. And also on that podcast, which I thought was actually very funny, Dolph talked about being in the Elimination Chamber and having a panic attack when they sealed him in the little cell. And almost freaking out because he didn't realize he was claustrophobic. But anyway, the 2002 Elimination Chamber match was absolutely tremendous. Tons of blood, violence, people going through. This was before they started gimmicking the pods. They actually hit the thing and it shattered.
Mm-hmm.
It was tremendous. But and also the debut of the brown tights.
Oh God, I was going to bring that up.
Yeah,
hideous.
The worst tights you've ever seen in your life.
It was like brown tights and brown cowboy boots. It looked like somebody's luggage got lost somewhere, and so they came up with this.
And that's exactly what happened, actually.
It was horrible. I mean, there's like one of the Shawn Michaels DVDs where they had a documentary that's like an extra where Triple H and Jericho were making fun of him because of those brown pants.
Mm-hmm.
That was really hideous. That brought the match down a star for me. Just those pants. And Jesus Christ, John.
They've
always said that Shawn Michaels could wear anything pulled off. He did not. That's not true.
No. Yes, these were a fail.
This is horrible.
He's worn many pairs of shorts that have been fails, and he did not get away with it.
I remember he wore some great smuggling shorts once. Like a smuggling grape. Or something like that.
Yeah.
Anyway. But this was like his first, this was like his second match after the big return against Triple H at SummerSlam that year. And he won the title in this match. Yeah, this was a great match.
Yeah.
I just hate to be doing it in that cell because look at that grate on the outside that you land on. And I mean, if it's just a regular cage, the cage in the Nation Chamber, that's just like link chain and stuff like that. It's not like just the mesh that's got a little bit of give because it's kind of thin. You know, the metal's kind of thin. So,
right.
But yeah, I can see why they hated all that.
Oh, well, my next match, and this actually features the match with the second most impressive physiques next to the Warriors team. And this is for both teams, actually. They're both so physically impressive, and this is one of the best work matches in the history of Survivor Series, and that is the Royal Family of Jerry Lawler and Sleazy, Queasy, and Cheesy when they defeated Clowns R Us at Doink the Clown, Dink the Clown, Tink and Wink. And I've never seen such five-star mat work from these little people than I've ever seen. They totally blew Mascarita Sagrada out of the water.
This was a fun match. I can't deny that.
And what year are we talking
to? Great in this time period.
That was 94. It was better than that Bob Backlund Bret Hart match on this show. I'll tell you that much. That boring ass shit.
Wasn't that bad.
Okay.
And the drama of that match when Joe in the towel Sue went throwing the towel and Helen had just had to be a bitch and throw it in and cost Bret
that riveting
title match.
That riveting 8-minute chicken wing Bob Backlund had Bret Hart in.
Yeah, and then it got bad.
It also featured Jeff Jarrett getting fucking karate kicked in the face by Chuck Norris. That was awesome.
I think the end of this major match ended with I know Lawler won, and then he turned on all the midgets, and then he ended up with a pie in his face.
That's right. You know, Lawler's so tremendous at, well, everything. This was good stuff. Even Jerry Lawler can take something really silly and dumb and make it entertaining.
They recently released the entire old Batman series on DVD, and he's on there. From when Adam West showed up in Memphis as Batman, and Jerry Lawler was just a Superman that shot an angle.
Huh. Never done.
Lawler, he did some really wacky shit back then. He was awesome.
As much as they used to, back in the Memphis days, they used to say how goofy the WWF was. It wasn't wrestling. They did some of the same kind of silly shit that WWF did back then.
Didn't also, for a long time, but didn't Jerry also, kind of do a gimmick when he'd wrestle, the jobbers or lesser guys, and he'd kind of, try and call the match during the match?
He does on commentary.
Yeah, he'd do it on commentary.
He
would
the microphone in his hand.
Yeah.
It's my turn now, huh?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I guess.
Survivor Series 1980, one of my favorite matches, Survivor Series 1989, it was the Ultimate Warrior, Jim the Anvil, Bret Hart, and the Rockers against Andre, the Giant, Haku, and it's strangely two were teaming after, they had the heat when he body slammed Big John Studd before WrestleMania, but anyway, and they were supposed to team with the Brainbusters on Anderson, Tully Blanchard, but Tully got popped for doing cocaine a little while before and quit. He got suspended. So Bobby Heenan had to take his place. And this was a fun match because it started off with, even before everybody got to the ring, they had, the heels taking over on the baby face, and then the Warrior was the last to enter, and he just knocked Andre Silly over the top rope, and he was the first one eliminated. And he's the first one eliminated, and the rest of the match was Arn Anderson and Shawn Michaels. When they worked together in this match, it was fucking awesome. Those two guys working together. And I remember the end was Arn Anderson had finally gotten beaten, and Bobby Heenan was left with the Ultimate Warrior. But he wasn't aware that Arn had got beaten, so he's telling Arn to come back, and the Warrior ended up, doing the press slam at the end of the show. And then the last shot of the show showed Heenan just staggering to the dressing room, and Warrior does his big run back to the dressing room right after the match, as he was still out in the ring, and he just gives Bobby Heenan a big drive-by clothesline and kept going. So to win the match and the show.
I'm looking at I'm looking at the results from this.
And this was the year they decided to have all the wacky team names.
Mm-hmm.
We had the Dream Team versus the Enforcers. We had King's Court versus the 4x4s. The Hulkamaniacs versus the Million Dollar Team. We had the Rude Brood, Roddy's Rowdies. And in the main event, the Ultimate Warrior. The Ultimate Warriors versus the Heenan family. Tremendous. Good stuff. Okay.
I'm surprised nobody jumped all over this one, but Brett and Sean from Survivor Series 1997.
I can't say they were my favorites, but it's definitely memorable.
It's definitely memorable.
It's the most famous match in Survivor Series history.
Wait. What happened? I don't know what you're talking about.
Yes, you do.
Just a dork. Yeah.
Drawing a blank. It couldn't have been very meaningful. I don't remember.
Hmm. Well, they've continued to do angles up in it, even in TNA up until, like, last year. So, The Montreal Screwjob, Edward. Perhaps you've heard of it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Something.
Yeah.
Might have heard something. Dave might have mentioned it briefly on an update one time or something. I don't know.
Sure. The match itself was actually going really well until Shawn Michaels put Brett in the sharpshooter and Dave had to rung the bell.
And you never see anybody get out of the ring faster.
No. And there's
the referee and Sean.
Yeah.
I believe the story was Dave Hebner had the car warmed up, was at the back door. And the referee just went straight to the back door and got out of town.
Uh-huh.
What a horrible thing about somebody. It's so shitty.
Before it all happened, I mean, it was an awesome match. Brett and Sean had awesome chemistry as far as their matches because they really made it look like they hated each other, which they actually did, and they were always intense.
Mm-hmm.
This was just that, and then just, you know, everything in the end, and then everything that happened after that, somehow some miracle got caught on camera on a fucking documentary being made where you get to see Vince McMahon walk out of a dressing room after getting knocked the fuck out, and you can tell he's concussed, basically, a big old black eye. They're basically carrying him, and then you get to watch Brett's fucking wife fucking start talking shit to fucking Triple H and the Road Warriors, and Triple H being a little bitch and denying anything that he had anything to do or knew anything about it, and then, you know, just the fact that supposedly The Undertaker was trying to break down Vince's door to find out what the fuck was going on. And just, God, that just everything in that match. And then, they, you know, Brett wore the wire before the match, and they get all that. And Vince is like, yeah, this is what, you know, we'll do that. And, you know, all in agreement. And then just, Jesus Christ, dude. It's just like, of all the days and all the events to have a camera crew there for, I mean, that's just the most perfect timing for everything.
Mm-hmm. Like some kind of sports entertainment thing run by the CIA. You got wiretaps and all this shit. Leave it to Triple H. If you use life as man to me, I'd probably deny it too at that point in time. And then I'd go on to the hotel.
Well, look at the way Sean left the ring. You know what I mean? He's trying to act like, I didn't want, you know, he's trying to, like, fuck you, Vince, kind of like, you know what I mean? Making it look like
he's
a total innocent party.
He was pissed off. And they were in the same dressing room. You remember? Brett came back and they were in the same dressing room. You asked Sean if he had anything to do with it, and Sean said he hadn't. His hands were clean on this, and he had nothing to do with it. So.
And he could basically, he almost sounded like he was crying when he was saying it. He's like, I swear to God, you know, basically saying to God that he didn't have any. That's what's funny, coming years later when he became a man of God and everything. But, yeah, everything about that was just fucking unreal.
The funniest thing is when Sean's walking up the ramp, just as the pay-per-view's ending, Earl whispers in his ear, but it's audible. You can actually hear him say, throw your hands up, celebrate.
Actually, I think that was Jerry Briscoe. Because Earl was always, I really have to make gold at that point.
Okay, so you can audibly hear that. So Sean played his part so well that, you know, that they had to remind him, hey, you just won the championship, celebrate. gosh, it was tremendous.
And then Brett Hawk blew Ruggie and Vince's face.
Oh, yep.
That was one hell of a loogie, too.
There was so much controversy at that time. And, oh, Brett's wife, you know, Colin Hunter, calling him Hunter, that's not his name, and blah, blah, blah. I was like, shut up.
Plenty of people call people by their nicknames backstage. Sure. So.
Yeah. Anyway.
As surprising as it is, you know, after all the big stuff with Sean and Brett over the years, I mean, they worked together for a long time. They only had 3 pay-per-view matches. I just thought about that when I was thinking about this Survivor Series. Because I think the other one, and I was going to go ahead and pop this in while we were talking about it, because I thought one of the best matches, or one of my favorite matches, was from 92 when they had Brett and Sean for the world title. In the main event.
Okay.
It had like a 24. I think to me, this is actually the best match they had on pay-per-view. Because it was just like, you know, I won't say the Iron Man was bad, but it wasn't as what it should have been.
It was a long match.
Yes. And
Yeah, sure as hell wasn't no Miami Toyota versus Kiko in any way. That's for damn sure.
That's for damn sure. I mean, and Brett and Sean had this match. Cause I remember it was like the previous Saturday night's main event. Like, I think it was final Saturday night's main event that Sean had won the Intercontinental title from Davey Boy, because then Davey Boy and Warriors got fired. So they changed the card all around and stuff like that. And but they had just like an awesome like 24, 25 minute match. And I think this was the best match they had on pay-per-view, so I want to throw that in there. And at the end, he celebrated with Santa Claus.
Did you ever see, it came out on a Coliseum home video, like really early on, they had Sean and Brett in a ladder match.
Yeah.
From,
I saw that.
Like, superstars. It wasn't anything special, but it was like, oh, wow.
That was like the first ladder match in WWE.
Yeah,
that was for ladder match. So I've heard of the idea of ladder match. That's a stupid
DC
match. I think what all goes on and what all can be done in the match. And it's like, this is the greatest match I've ever seen. Greatest idea for a match I've ever seen in my life. And I think they were gonna do Sean and Brett in the ladder match at SummerSlam that year, but that was before they changed it and went to Wembley, so they did the Bulldog and Brett in the main event. So.
Right.
Isn't that where Hawk went crazy and just disappeared after the match? After his match?
Yeah, I think so, because that was the last... I think he quit right after that, because I don't think he had failed a drug test or something.
Yeah. All right, whose turn is it?
It's your turn, because I had to pop in with that Sean and Brett match I wanted to mention. So go ahead.
Okay. Well, I got to go with this match. And I'm only going for this match because it's like the hometown boy doing good. And it's the match of Andre the Giant and Rick Rude, Demo Bravo, Mr. Perfect, and Harley Race as they defeated Jim Hacksaw, Jim Duggan, Jake the Snake Roberts, Ken Patera, Tito Santana, and the Marlboro Man, Scott Casey.
Scott Casey. That's a name for the past. And her
He's wearing some ugly-ass tights. He wasn't wearing his regular cowboy attire. His hair was pretty, pretty thin at that time. And this is like his last big match before he went off to Las Vegas to become an American gigolo.
Is that true?
Actually, yes, it is. That's what Les Thatcher told me.
Oh, so he frequents those places?
He picks up old ladies and takes their money. And
well,
they take something from him.
Well, they don't take... Never mind. I don't want to talk
about
it. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, it's Scott Casey, longtime San Antonio wrestler in Southwest and also in world class. And basically, he was just those were the only times for late since he really was big or whatever. But he was pretty decent. And,
I'm pretty sure this was he
replaced
somebody.
Somebody got injured or something. Yeah, something happened last second. That's why he was in it.
It was either Don Margo or the Junkyard Dog, because I know both got fired on a European tour or something, and they're supposed to be in a couple matches of Survivor Series that year. So I think that's where he came in.
Yeah. But yeah, that's my match. So anyone's free to go after that.
Okay. I will be the voice of the people. Our friend Mr. Gonzalez has requested that we talk about Bret Hart defeating Stone Cold Steve Austin in 1996.
I love the finish of that match. That was awesome.
How could you not?
Yeah.
The finish, I remember it was the same finish. You remember the Piper and Hart match at WrestleMania 8?
Yeah. It wasn't as smooth.
Yes.
That one was actually, they actually did the finish a little better because Brett did a little smoother on that one.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was still great. I mean, and that was basically because Stone Cold just decided he just started calling out Brett for like the longest time. And then they finally got the match. And it was really, really good match. And the Dream or Ted DiBiase's?
The Million Dollar Dream.
Yeah, the $1 million, basically the Cobra Clutch, basically. And, you know, then Brett just kind of climbed the ropes, the turnbuckles, and rolled over and got the pin. But, yeah, that was it. Brett and Sean had chemistry, and then Brett and Austin had some damn good chemistry, too.
Yeah, I loved the way that you just think that these guys hated each other. They had such great chemistry in all their matches, not just this one. I mean, so believable and such great technicians in the ring. I just, they never had a bad match, if you ask me.
Yeah, and also, he was just so incredible at this point. You know, really just getting a Stone Cold character going, but I mean, just the promos and stuff, he thought that he was just legit, angry redneck, you know. I remember it was a few weeks before. Remember when he attacked Brian Pillman and re broke his ankle or something with the chair, and then he tried to go break in the man's house and just put a gun on him.
Do you remember that first Stone Cold VHS that they put out where he's beating up like the technicians, you know, pushing everyone around. And
yeah.
It's just so awesome.
Yeah, it was called Cuz Stone Cold Said So, right?
Yeah.
And they weren't even censoring anything. He said every dirty word in the book on this.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, at that time, all the rules were off. I mean, even the DX, videotape at that time, there was actual nudity on that thing.
They're talking about smoking weed.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yep, no boundaries.
Yeah, those early VHSs were awesome. I wish they put them on the network.
I bet you that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Anyway. We've got about 25 minutes left. We were going to talk about this year's Survivor Series.
Let me throw in just one more.
Didn't The Rock actually make his debut at Survivor Series, or am I thinking?
Yeah, Survivor Series 96, they built him up with some vignettes with him signing and, you know, talking about his dad. I'm trying to remember the match. It was The Rock. It was Rocky Maivia, Jake the Snake, Mark Mero, and the Stalker, Barry Windham, which is horrible, weren't they? And they went up against Andrus Helmsley, who was Intercontinental Champion, Goldust, the Sultan. If you remember, it was Plateau, and it was one more. Jerry Lawler was the other person on the team. No, it wasn't the Sultan. It was Crush and Jerry Lawler were the two people on the team. So.
And I remember he had that stupid hair, and he had the stupid blue streamer thing. I don't even know how to describe it.
The fans not taking to him when he first started was the best thing ever happened to him.
I think it was that Jerry Curl kind of thing he had going on. But anyway,
okay.
I guess now we can preview this week's Survivor Series.
Yeah, this is not too impressed with the build for this.
I'm already pissed off. They took off the match I was most looking forward to. There's no fucking apparently. Maybe it'll happen, but I don't look like we're gonna get to see the Bunny Rick Adam Rose again.
I'm sure there'll be time for raping later.
I wouldn't be surprised they treat this show like an episode of Raw or something.
Hey, Kutcher, I know there was a whole bunch of Rosebuds, but did you notice the very, very happy, excited Rosebud?
They were all
kind of like, she was kind of dressed kind of holiday-ish, spiritish. Tessa Blanchard was one of the Rosebuds.
Is that right?
Yeah.
We don't.
Yeah, she's cute, man. She's
met her recently, didn't you? Did you meet her recently?
I watched the WSU pay-per-view, and they had her on there, and she's very cute, and she's pretty good. She's pretty decent. I mean, you know, she's not up there with the top women's wrestlers yet, but she's only been doing it for, a year? But for a year, she's pretty damn good.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't even know of a year. But I'm pretty sure pretty soon we're going to be seeing in WWE. They'll probably even have to make Diva Tag Team Champions for the team of Charlotte and Tessa Blanchard.
Yep. The Horsemen Reborn. As long as they don't call them the Four Horsemen, that's a stupid fucking name.
Yeah, kind of.
They just don't roll off the tongue like the Horsemen. I love a few of them could run off my phone. You know what I'm saying?
No, what are you saying?
Never mind. Speaking of NXT, I saw today that Kevin Steen makes his debut on the next special. So
excellent.
Wait, who? I didn't hear you.
Kevin Owens.
Kevin Steen.
Oh, Kevin Steen. Okay.
Yeah, on the December the 11th special, he makes his debut, so that should be pretty good.
Probably making his debut, costing Sami Zayn the match because Sami Zayn will probably be the bunny.
That makes sense, kind of. Anyway. Anyway, here's the rundown of the pay-per-view coming up this Sunday. Of course, you can check it out on the WWE Network. Remember, right now, it is, in fact, free for first-time subscribers, unless you're a sap that popped for it as soon as it came out. Then it is not free.
It's $10. What's the big deal?
Yeah.
I'm buying $10 on my couch.
It's just nice to get something for free.
And it's not free. You're paying $9.99 for it. It's not free. It's maybe free for 100,000 people.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, I don't know order of matches, so I'm going to start here. We have the WWE Tag Team Champions Gold and Stardust. That's the way they say it, not me. Versus The Miz and Damian Mizdow versus Los Matadores and The Usos in a fatal four-way matchup.
Okay, before we get on to the match, what is the big deal that you, Brian, and Vinny have to make a talking about Gold and Stardust. What is, they are introducing them like they would any other team.
It's not his last name. It's one name, Goldust.
His name is Goldust and Stardust. His name is not Gold.
People don't call him Mr. Dust.
What's the big deal, though? Like, back in the day, they didn't introduce Kevin Von Erich and Kerry Von Erich. They introduced Kerry and Kevin, the Von Erich brothers.
It was their last name.
It's the same thing. Dust is their last name.
His last name is not Dust. The way they say it, his first name is Gold. His last name is Dust.
This is why I don't like wrestling fans. They argue about the dumbest things.
Write the name down. It's one fucking word.
Yeah. It's one word. It's always been one word. Goldust. Yeah. Anyway. This will be something to see.
I put the titles on them.
Absolutely. I don't know why they changed this. This was supposed to be an 8-man Survivor Series elimination match. Maybe they're just going to run out of time by the end of the thing. I don't know. But anyway, I'd kind of like to see some more, Survivor Series matchups than just a Survivor Series quote unquote pay-per-view. But anyway, so that's that. Next up, they decided to put this as a Survivor Series elimination tag team match. They have Alicia Fox, Natalia, Naomi, and Emma versus Paige, Cameron, Summer Rae, and Layla.
5-star match. Best match of the whole show by far.
I'm fixed dinner at that point.
At least Rosa's not in it. Oh, wait. You didn't say Rosa, did you?
No. Rosa's not in this. Thank God.
Right. Even I can't defend Rosa, And by the way, did you guys know that Cameron... Cameron or Ariani or whatever the hell her name is ranked number 17 in this year's PWI Women's Top 50.
I didn't know there was such a thing.
Well, there is.
I had no idea.
She's like almost 20 spots higher than Naomi. And Karen Tiro. Can you believe that?
This Mark magazine got something wrong?
They need to revise it because now that Mia Yim is the new Shine Champion after being catapulted from after being on our show and she's now the Shine Champion. They should revise it and make her number one.
She hasn't been a Kano.
You know what? Nikki Knuckles is on the list and she looks exactly like Bull McConnell now.
That's true.
Or even, well, the hair at least.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if one woman's match wasn't enough for you, that's right. There's another one. Because AJ Lee is going to take on fearless Nikki Bella.
And this is where Brie Bella, instead of everyone's going to think she's going to help AJ against her evil sister, she's going to help her evil sister, and the twins will be united as evil twins now.
I expect a title change in this match.
I think they should have timed this match to coincide with the end of the 30 days.
Yeah.
So she could screw her in the match with her not knowing it and then fire her, but the contract actually run out on her.
They're going to be reunited. But actually what they should do is they should just have maybe a smaz or a DQ or a count out. And they should just let AJ go away, and then they can have the rematch next month. But instead of AJ, it'll be Brie Bella as AJ because she was by far a hotter version of AJ the other day.
I
wouldn't mind that. She even skipped better.
And
a match that I'm actually looking forward to, although the build has been Dean Ambrose will be wrestling. Oh, shoot. Bray Wyatt. I'm sorry. I lost it for a second.
Yeah.
Man, listen, yeah. One more person on the board, bitch, that Dean Ambrose has been killed dead. I'm going to fucking vomit. Jesus Christ, people.
Hey, have you guys, speaking of Dean Ambrose, have you seen my new cover photo on my Facebook page?
No, I don't go to your Facebook page.
Have you seen it, Craig?
No, I will go over there right now.
You'll enjoy it as I see it go. It's a little late, but, you know, it's awesome. But anyway, I think it'll be a good match. I'm not as down on Wyatt as everyone. I think he's still decent. He really is, though, when you think about it, the Bugsy McGraw, like an updated version of Bugsy McGraw, just evil instead of good, because I mainly saw the good Bugsy McGraw, not the bad one. But I can totally see that. But I still enjoy him. And fucking Ambrose is awesome. He'll get a good match out of it no matter what. And I think it has a good chance to be the best match on the show, maybe. I think it'll be good.
Yeah, I look forward to the match. I had a nice argument with Brian and Vince about this, but I think it's going to be a fine match.
Yeah. That's just another thing Brian likes to bitch about nothing for. Just, God, sometimes I just want to stick my hand through my phone while I'm listening to him and just choke him. I don't know how you don't physically harm him when you're actually doing the show with him in person.
Well, you see, Ed, he pays me.
Yeah.
That would be dumb.
Not smart to throttle the person that pays the check.
Yeah. You don't crap where you eat. You know what I'm saying?
Okay, well, whoever fires you, that day should be the day you kick his ass.
Oh. Yeah. I'm burning a bridge that day, for sure. Anyway. And, of course, we have the main event. All came together. You saw it last Monday night. Team Cena united. If John Cena, Dolph Ziggler, The Big Show, Eric Rowan, and the Ryback versus Seth Rollins, Kane, Mark Henry, Brody Lee,
Luke Harper.
Thank you. Luke Harper. And the nasty Russian Rusev.
You know, I actually love that angle at the end of Raw.
I thought it was very good.
It was very good, but the best part is if you were watching that segment while reading Twitter, because Dave had one of the greatest tweets ever. Because remember when John Cena went outside and he's, like, looking for his team and he's, like, picking all these little kids? They put, now's the time to have the Bruiser Brody in the gimmick audience. And that would have been so perfect. I could just see Bruiser Brody sitting there in his fucking shorts and T-shirt and hair tied back, just sitting in the audience. And then, you know, because I think they've done that, like, basically wherever Bruiser Brody wrestled, where he did something like that, where they needed a partner, and he just happened to be in the audience. But that was great. But I thought the angle was great. I really liked the part where fucking Rowan came out, because it just was such a surprise. It's just like, what? And then Luke Harper, the way Luke Harper sold it, I mean, he's already got those crazy eyes, and he was just like, what the fuck? And that was great. And then the Cesaro thing, I'm like, what? What the hell's going on? I actually thought Cesaro was going to uppercut Cena right there, the way he looked at him right before he walked over. But then he just laughed and walked over. I thought that was actually pretty great, you know. So there were parts of that angle that I thought were just awesome.
I think they've done a good job at a pretty good job of rehab and Ryback the last few weeks from his previous, like, heel runs and stuff like that the last year or so.
I don't know if they've been doing a good job with him or if people are just clamoring for a new face.
It's the people, because he shouldn't be wrestling these long-ass matches. He should be doing just like Goldberg, just boom, 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 you know.
Yeah.
But his matches keep getting longer and longer, and that's the one thing. But the people, that's the thing, though. As bad as his matches are, or as not as good as he is, the people were still getting behind them just because they want someone to get behind. Because, you know, without Reigns and without Reigns and Bryan there, I mean, they really aren't thin as far as the baby faces. I mean, Jesus Christ, Ziggler is in there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, they need help, they want someone to get behind.
One thing that they helped get him kind of back over is they just changed his music back to his original one, the Feed Me More. And people just started chanting it again. But,
Yep.
I don't know what Triple H is in this match now after Monday. Maybe he will be. Who knows?
It should It should be a handicap match. Somehow Triple H and the fucking the two goofballs should be added to the match. It should be 5-on-8.
Just,
you know, like last minute, like the last, like the right before the match, Hunter makes it like last decision, or like makes it like, you know, and adds himself in them, and then that way it looks like they're gonna win because they got so many.
And now with the stipulations, I don't know. The Cena's team loses, his team's fired, everybody's fired, and Authority loses, they're no longer the Authority. I don't know, you know, what's gonna happen.
Yeah. I kind of expect Team Rollins to, or excuse me, Team Authority to stay on top. I don't know where else they would go. Just to be honest,
I kind of think the Authority's played out at this point.
Oh yeah, it totally is.
Maybe get Stephanie off the TV or something like that. You know
what else? The whole
Authority figure thing in the first place. It was like 20 years old. And,
oh yeah.
I'm just so sick.
Well, they've been doing the disgruntled employee versus the boss for 12 years. You know what I mean? I mean, there's always somebody disgruntled with Vince or Triple H or whomever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they've been doing this angle forever.
Really?
Not just WWE.
We talked about Montreal. That's
what basically saved them and turned to war when Vince became the evil character, and that's their biggest period ever. So I can kind of see where they kind of keep going back to it.
Yeah, but that well's done dried up. It's time to go fish in another hole.
Yeah, but what's worse, that or like TNA continuing to like hire Vince Russo every couple of years? And now that they're on Destination America, and that spike, don't be surprised if somebody comes back.
I hadn't even I'm not gonna watch it. I had not even thought about that. Thanks a lot, Ed.
I had not even checked to see if I got the channel. Nor do I care.
I'm pretty sure you don't buy it.
What's the lead in going to be? The Wild World of Bacon or something like that? Ghost Travelers or some stupid shit. I think I got DirecTV, so I'm pretty sure I got that channel. So my,
you do.
Twitter.
I think it's 286.
I don't want to know the number.
I know you have it because I have DirecTV as well.
Yeah, I got all those. It's all those Discovery channels. I got all those, so.
Yeah. Edward, we've got 5 minutes, and I have not yet had dinner. Can we throw out the plugs and take this out?
Oh, okay. Well,
hey, neighbor, I've got me a
you demanded to have the show today at this time, and now you're mad that you haven't had dinner. We should just control. We need to go a whole other hour. Sorry, Craig.
I've got a steak and baked potato in the kitchen, so I'm with Craig.
I got some microwave egg rolls that I guess I could eat, so I'll join you.
Craig, also, I just looking at my email, and I just got an email from Netflix, and they got the first season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. out. So.
Excellent.
I'm going to check that out.
Started off bad and got really good.
Now, so I'm guessing that we're not doing anything next week because I'm going to be out of town. So.
It seems like every single TV show is off next week. The Sons of Anarchy is dark. I don't.
Thanksgiving week. So.
Mm-hmm. Modern Family had their Thanksgiving show this week, so I'm sure all the comedies are off. Next week seems kind of boring. The only thing that seems good on TV is freaking Charlie Brown Thanksgiving.
Which you can watch at any time.
Yeah, but it's not the same unless you watch it right before Thanksgiving. But anyway, everyone check out AngryMarks.com. You can always download and stream our show at AngryMarks.com, along with a lot of other shows. Stevie's probably going to be pissed because I forgot to tell him we were doing the show tonight. But anyway, check out AngryMarks.com. You can also download and stream our show at BlogTalkRadio.com/Contreras and older shows at BlogTalkRadio.com/Edward-Laredo. You can follow me at Facebook at Edward Laredo. You can follow me at Twitter at Ed in San Antonio. And if you are going to WrestleMania, I will have the Facebook page up by this weekend. I'm just waiting on Matt Clary to hurry up and make me a cover photo for it. And we will all be ready to go. So hopefully Matt will do a good job. And I gave him an awesome idea, but it's all up to him, so I don't know what he's actually doing. But once I get that cover photo, the webpage will be up, and we'll have all the WrestleMania information and and stuff like that. Basically, I don't know anything about San Francisco, so don't expect a big thing like New Orleans or New York. Basically, I think we're going to dinner on Friday and maybe lunch on Sunday. That's the guy I don't know a damn thing about that area.
And I hear there's a big show on Sunday here. I hear too. So
yeah. And also Brandon Draven should be bringing me some samples of some of the good medical marijuana there. So I'm very excited about that. Almost even more than the show. But so everyone check out that.
And you can follow me on Twitter. I am at my last name proper PROPER. A word jam after it, so proper jam on Twitter. I just put up a throwback Thursday picture that I think everybody will get a kick out of.
You can go to youtube.com/Contreras. I got a bunch of old wrestling videos up there. If you like old wrestling or if you like episodes of Frasier, you can go up there and watch that stuff.
Did you say episodes of Frasier?
Yes.
Said.
Only the greatest comedy.
You know what?
Time.
No, the greatest comedy of all time was Soap. You should put up episodes of Soap. Do you guys remember Soap?
Yeah, I never watched it, though.
Number
oh, my God,
Frasier.
Craig, you really should. It's actually one of the funniest shows of all time.
I think the Cosby Show was better. Oh, wait.
Isn't the one that was the spinoff of that was Benson, right?
Yeah, Benson was a spinoff of Soap. He was a butler on Soap.
Yeah, and then he was like the lieutenant governor.
Yeah, somehow he went from the butler to lieutenant governor.
I remember
well,
that.
Well, actually, I think he became later on toward the end. I think he was like the house butler basically for that too, or I don't know. I forget how it went, but Soap was awesome because Benson was he was awesome. He was even more
maybe
of a prick on Soap than on Benson.
Staff or something. Well, maybe it was his chief of staff or something.
Yeah.
Or something like
and
that.
And then they had Billy Crystal. Was awesome, playing one of the first gay characters on TV. And, Richard Mulligan, he was awesome. I mean, that show was way ahead of its time. So that was one of the – and then it always pissed me off because it seemed like I always missed the very last episode. And it took me to watching it, like, almost four or five times to realize there was no last episode. Where the last episode was the cliff. Yeah, it ended on like all these big cliffhangers, and I always figured I missed it, and I always had to fucking get pissed off because I'd have to rewatch it again. And it took me years before I realized there was no ending to Soap.
Hey, Craig, are you still there?
Yes, sir.
Was Guardians of the Galaxy? Did you say that was pretty good?
I'm sorry.
Guardians of the Galaxy. Did you say that was pretty good?
Oh. It's so good.
Is it? Because they just released it on Xbox this week, and I'm thinking about checking it out.
Yeah, it's like a 2 week iTunes and download platforms before it's released on DVD. So, yeah, go check that out this weekend. It's good stuff.
Also, if anybody else was thinking about a movie to watch, I just watched Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
Yep, good stuff.
That's an awesome movie. Check it out.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think I might do that way this weekend. I forgot about that one was out. Did you see the unreleased ending of Guardians of the Galaxy that got released, Craig? I haven't seen it because I still haven't seen the movie. But apparently there's like a dance-off at the end or something.
Yes. Yeah, I saw that on Darren's page. That was good stuff, too.
Okay.
It's just a joke. It's nothing. Anyway.
Well, anyway, we'll be back next week. So everybody come back next week.
I'm not going to be back next week. Next week I'll be off.
What?
It's holiday, brother.
No, we're doing a show on Thanksgiving. You just have to man up and do it.
I'm going to be out of town. I'm going to be in Oklahoma having Thanksgiving.
You only
need, people I care about.
You'll have your phone with you. You'll have your phone with you.
I'm not doing a show on Thursday. I'm not doing
a 5-hour show on Thursday.
Okay, well, now you're just being stupid.
Craig's so appalled. He hung up on me already. So
okay.
maybe we'll do something next week on another day, or maybe we'll just take the week off. So everybody, we will be back eventually. Bye bye.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man.
You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the measuring stick. Let's go, hook him up!
Tonight.